You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
During this edition of the State Capitol Report, we will examine the state of working Wisconsin on this Labor Day 2008 and discuss recommendations from the Center on Wisconsin Strategy to improve the economic well-being of working people. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, Labor Day, September the 1st. The Center on Wisconsin Strategy says the state of working Wisconsin 2008 is not good. We'll talk about why and what should be done about it with Laura Dresser, a labor economist, the associate director of the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, and the co-author of the biennial report, The State of Working Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why do you say the state of working Wisconsin is not so good on this Labor Day?
Well, I think a lot of the headlines tell the story as much as all the data here, but the we've seen the job picture sort of turn around and slow down. We see the surging gas prices, the surging food prices, the housing bubble melted, and we're seeing layoffs and wage decline as well.
Yeah. And in fact, a lot of your data was even before some of this meltdown.
Yeah. In fact, I was a little bit surprised to see as much negative news in the 12 months. Not all of the data comes out for 2008 yet. So some of the stuff we're doing is from 2007. And even there, you see some early glimpses of some bad stuff.
Yeah. So talk about, let's start with the job loss. How many jobs have been lost in Wisconsin?
About 20,000 over the last year. I think in some ways the important thing to keep in mind is that the 2000 recession was very hard. We lost a lot of jobs. The labor market was stagnant for a relatively long time, but then grew slowly, over 2003 to about a year ago. Then it turned. So the question, isn't so much exactly how many jobs. Depending on which months you check, you'll get a different number. But, what we have is a labor market that's shrinking again, even before there's, I think the national folks will declare a recession that started sometime around this period, but we're losing jobs. So.
Yeah, and certainly we saw that in the headlines, too, and these jobs might not even be included in your figures with the GM closing and the paper mills in Kimberly and Niagara closing.
Yeah, exactly, and Midwest, and it's not just a manufacturing story, of course, but then we also have Midwest Express and the corporate headquarters of Miller and, all that, so.
Yeah. Is there any job gain? We hear that some of these manufacturing jobs, at least, were going to be replaced by jobs in the new economy or the knowledge economy.
Well, obviously, the economy is a pretty dynamic thing, and sometimes jobs are going away, and we hear headlines. Well, we don't see what's happening for jobs that are being produced. Obviously, a lot of jobs are being produced. You can see reports about, high-tech jobs or service sector jobs, food service and hospitality are always growing, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
But the net effect is we're having more losses than gains right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still down. Clearly, stuff is coming in all the time.
And we're not apparently getting paid as much as we used to for those jobs.
Yeah, that's true, too. And this was a bit of a surprise to me. Wages have been growing faster than inflation ever since I've started writing this report. In 1996 was the first edition, and even going back to the early 1990s in the state of Wisconsin, wages have moved up, pretty consistently every year. And over the last 3 years, wages are actually coming down, both state and national wages. The median wage of the worker is declining. And that, is especially surprising or hard news in the context of these really high price increases on gas and food.
Yeah, and so that our wages are declining compared to the cost of living?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And this one was a little troublesome. It says here, the median for person Wisconsin family income has fallen nearly $6,000 since 2000, and that's three times the national drop?
Yeah. And that is, I think, especially disturbing. One of the things I went to do is just look back at the 1980s. In some ways, I've always used the 1980s as the worst decade in Wisconsin economic history. And what happened there is that there was a pretty heavy decline in median four-person family income. But by 8 years out, it was coming back up. And by the last 2 years of that decade, it had recovered. And so the thing that's surprising to me about this is both the scale of the decline, that it's so much bigger than the national decline, and that we're 8 years out from that recession, or 7 years from the recession, we're still not, we haven't turned the corner on moving back towards it. And I think, you know, the best economic evidence suggests we've slipped into another recession without ever really recovering from the last one.
Yeah. Any idea why Wisconsin would be experiencing a downturn that's bigger than the national decline?
You know, some of it has to do with shifts in working out. I would guess that it's a little bit about the shifts away from manufacturing that hit especially hard here and hit some workers especially hard. I would expect also we haven't seen that some of it is that families have less hours of work or are getting out of the labor market sooner and that sort of thing.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about what could or should be done about the state of working Wisconsin to better the state of working Wisconsin after we check the weather. And we welcome your questions for our guest. We welcome even your own personal experiences, perhaps. What kind of a year has it been for you? Well, how do you assess the state of working Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Laura Dresser is the Associate Director of the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, talking with us on this Labor Day morning about the COW report that has been released today on the state of working Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, September the 1st, Labor Day. We will continue a Labor Day tradition, and in our next hour, after 8 o'clock, welcome in David Newby, the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. David Newby stops by every Labor Day, at least, to talk about the state of labor, talk about some challenges facing American workers in today's economy and the role of labor in the presidential election coming up after 8 o'clock. Right now, we're talking with Laura Dresser, who is the Associate Director of the Center on Wisconsin Strategy. Every 2 years, the Center on Wisconsin Strategies issues a report, The State of Working Wisconsin. For Labor Day 2008, the state of working Wisconsin is not very good, and we're talking about why that is, and we're talking also about what can be done to turn things around. And we welcome your input. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Is there anything, Laura Dresser, that the state can do about the state of working Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things that we can do as a state. I think a lot of the times we think that these are just national trends, and of course they are related to a national economy, but there's a lot of stuff we could do here. One of the things that we point out is that given the high transportation and energy costs, a really massive program to try and help families save money through energy efficiency in their houses, to help families save money through better public transit and other options, could really put money back in families' pockets when in a time that's there's such stress. And, of course, that has good effects in terms of greening our economy and also keeping more money in the state, because most of the money we spend on energy just goes out of the state.
Yeah. To talk a little bit more about that, what does the state of Wisconsin do to provide this help?
Well, right now, you know, there are a lot of programs in the state and pretty good ones in terms of getting energy efficiency, especially in the homes of low-income people. But it really could be a much more massive and systematic investment to deploy really the best off-the-shelf technology in terms of energy efficiency to houses throughout the state. You can save so much money doing this, you can afford to, you know, invest the money up front and save the money later, and then both the state saves money and family saves money. So you could just make a much more massive push towards getting energy efficiency technology, whether it's insulation or wrapping furnaces or whatever.
Yeah, and so I'm kind of getting into some nuts and bolts since this is our state capital report where we talk about state public policy. Are you looking for the state legislature to put aside money in the state budget so that this investment can take place? That somehow this money is then filtered to the needy or whoever needs this energy efficiency work?
Yeah, in fact, we're working on a model in Milwaukee, and other people are more experts in this than I. But it is such an interesting issue that it might be worth talking to them sometime. But the idea is to get a financing instrument where you put the money in up front, and then to charge people on their bills with this. So some of this has to do with how the Public Service Commission is thinking about what the services they are providing or requiring utilities to provide. Some of it is finding the financing for the upfront investment, so a state legislation on that, a large investment there. And or you could, use a mix of public and private capital or even all private capital because of the payout timelines on this stuff. So in some ways, it's just trying to make sure it happens at every level. And then also the state could also to be really focusing on public buildings and retrofitting of public buildings to get them to the highest standards.
Yeah. And the thought here is that not only does this save money for our personal pocketbooks, but this could help provide green jobs.
Yeah. You get a triple bounce out of this. If we had a lot of people really doing this kind of work, there's a whole range from unskilled to skilled construction labor required to do that sort of work. And also, you save people money, you get some jobs, you green the economy, and you stop sending so much energy money outside of the state.
Yeah. You also say that the state should raise and index the minimum wage.
Yeah. Every year, or not every year, I mean, too infrequently, the minimum wage gets attention. And so it languishes in increasing or declining value for a long period of time. The 515 was 7 or 8 years at $5.15 at the federal level. This is why so many states stepped in and moved their wage floors. More than 26 moved above that 515. The feds have now moved theirs. But 10 states have already indexed their minimum wage to have it keep up with inflation. And I think that's one way to just to not have this kind of glitchy in and out of focus on minimum wage workers and to really say the wage floor should provide a standard of living that keeps up with the cost of living.
Yeah. And do we think that the wage decline in Wisconsin is due to minimum wage jobs, though?
No. It's part of the picture of the stresses on the labor market, but I don't think you would find median wage decline relating directly to minimum wage decline. But I do think our neglect of minimum labor standards, both in the neglect of moving the minimum wage up and in the increasing violations you see see documented, especially in some urban economies, are a real drag at some point on the even further up in the labor market.
Yeah. I see here a recommendation to define career pathways and align education and training with them. What does this mean?
We think of that as sort of building the skills, finding ways to build the skills of the Wisconsin workforce. Career pathways is just a sort of inside the education system way of thinking about the way that people move between work and learning. And so often in the U.S., what we set up and in Wisconsin is sort of you go to school and then you go get a job. And because the economy is evolving quickly, because some folks are in the labor force and don't have the skills they need to get into a better job, we need to find more ways to make it easier for people to move from the work to school at the same time, at night or whatever, and then back into better jobs. So that back and forth move between school and work and having that relate to real predictable advances in terms of the kind of work you're doing is what a career ladder is about. And Wisconsin has done a lot of work in this direction, but I think keeping on that target and keeping on the target of being connected to what the local industry needs are and what the technical colleges are providing for it, and the ways to help working people move between the two is the trick.
You know, I read last week a story about the paper mill workers from Kimberley, the mill that was shut down recently in Kimberley, saying that they were going to be getting this money and help in retraining and education to get a different job. And the union person there saying, you know, we'd much rather have the help in keeping this mill open. Is there anything the state can do along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that specific case, if there was more the state could do. And I know the paper mill industry has faced a lot. But it is true that the best thing we can do is try and help the industries we have to stay competitive in the international context, both in terms of the technology they have and the skills their workers have. And we do some in that direction, but we probably could do more. And that's the sort of thing. It's both supports from the state, like the Manufacturing Extension Program, and the state helping their companies even understand where they are competing in the international economy. Sometimes that takes data that universities have researchers could figure out that could really serve the industry. So there's sort of ways to help the industry see where it is and to build the skills of the workers to get it at the front edge and most competitive edge instead of sort of losing the jobs in the long run.
Now, what else can the state do to help the state of working Wisconsin?
We identified a couple things that the state could do for working families. You know, there's a lot of stress, especially in the state of Wisconsin. We have very working women, the sixth highest rate of women in work in the nation. And, you know, that puts a lot of stress on families in terms of the numbers of hours devoted to work and who has time to volunteer or visit the kid at school, who stays home, you know, who can afford to stay home when the child is born. So we, you know, a few states have already instituted paid family leave. That's something Wisconsin could figure out a way to do that would help families either when, you know, they're dealing with parents in serious health decline or with newborns or adoptions, and also paid sick days for workers, another thing that other states are looking at. And, you know, increasing the focus in the Wisconsin Shares Program on quality, making sure that we fund that program and help working families be able to afford, especially low-wage working families, be able to afford child care, but also to make sure that that child care is of a high-quality level. Those are some of those suggestions.
Yeah. We will talk about these suggestions and welcome your reaction to these recommendations to better the economic lives of working men and women in Wisconsin. Do you agree with these suggestions or not? Paid family leave in Wisconsin? Raise the minimum wage and index it in Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're talking with Laura Dresser. She is the Associate Director of the Center on Wisconsin Strategy. She's a labor economist, and she is co-author of the biennial report, The State of Working Wisconsin. The state of working Wisconsin on this Labor Day 2008 is not good, according to the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, and we're talking about how to make it better. We'll check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll take your calls here on the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Monday, Labor Day, September the 1st, 2008. We are talking about the sad state of working Wisconsin on this Labor Day 2008, according to a report released today by the Center on Wisconsin Strategy. Wisconsin is losing jobs, some 24,000 since June of 2007. The median wage is down. Family income has dropped nearly three times the national average since 2000. We're talking about this report, The State of Working Wisconsin, and how the state and its workers are faring on this Labor Day morning. And we are focusing now on recommendations to make it better, to improve the lives of working people. What do we think about these recommendations to increase the minimum wage and index it to inflation? How about building Wisconsin's green future and make our existing economy greener? How about better work-life balance in Wisconsin by providing paid family leave and paid sick days for workers? Just some of the recommendations in the State of Working Wisconsin 2008. And we welcome your questions and reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Laura Dresser, our guest, Associate Director of the Center on Wisconsin Strategy. And our first caller is John in Milwaukee. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling.
I have a question. So I think those suggestions could help, but I'm not an economist, but I sort of study mathematics, and I've been watching the, what I call the middle class, kind of between $20,000 and $90,000 per family decline really since 2001 on a national level. And my thoughts are that, again, as a lover of mathematics, that the problems are much bigger than what an individual state can do, in that with globalization and sort of focus on shareholder return, we're kind of, in a way, cutting our own hand off because we rely so much on consumer spending in our country. And I was wondering what your guests thought about the long-term prospects, like how many decades, and I might sound like a pessimist, but how many decades will it take before I think it'll keep declining for some time, again, median income for the middle class, before, I guess, we equalize the global labor force. And I'd love to hear what your guest thinks about that. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Laura?
Yeah, that you raised a really important point. And, you know, some people say it by saying, you know, look, sometime between 1990 and 2000, you know, we basically doubled the world labor force by having China move into markets, India move into international markets, and the former Soviet Union move into the international market. You'd sort of double the labor force without really appreciably changing the amount of capital in that equation. And any mathematician or economist would sort of say, huh, that looks like a long-term problem. I think that might be true. But you know, so that's a sort of pessimistic view, and I'm certainly familiar with that. But you know, at the same time, you can look at and you also have really driven it at a central point, which is that what we see is a lot of increasing inequality in the United States. And so it's not like nobody's getting money. It's just that the folks that are getting money are increasingly few and concentrated at the top of the income distribution. It isn't the case that European countries, for example, look exactly like this in the global economy. Certainly they're all globalized. Certainly they're facing more challenging trends than they have in the past, but their systems for distributing the income and the surplus that's generated, you know, the income that's generated in the economy, means that median workers feel more effect of it. We have economic growth in the United States. It's just that median workers never get to see it, never get the product now of that growth, whereas 20 years ago we did. Other countries have figured out a better way to globalize, which means, you know, I think really as your economy grows, and as we sit in this global economy, that we need systems that ensure the distribution moves a little better so that we keep the middle class strong, like you were saying.
Yeah. So are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future?
You know, I was more optimistic before I wrote this report. You know, I actually, you know, I guess I am an optimist in many ways. It's very easy in the context of all this bad news to forget that, you know, Wisconsin's economy is as big as it's ever been, bigger than it's ever been. We have more generated in the state today than we ever have. We have some serious problems about how we distribute that, about who wins when the economy grows, and just looking forward, you know, there are all these opportunities of things that we could be doing better. So we can do better, and, you know, I think we have the means to do it.
Thanks to John. Keith in Bonduelle is with us now. Hi, Keith.
Hi. My question for your caller is, I'm glad you're talking about the European, because that's where my question goes. Having studied a little bit, over in France, what I've read, They have one of the highest minimum wages in Europe, in Western Europe. The question is, there is, the problem with there is, they do, you know, supply high minimum wage, but at the same time, they have to stay competitive. They got to, you know, if they're going to have a higher minimum wage, that wage has to be passed on. And the thing, what I have read, they are, what they will do is they'll either, you know, to stay competitive, they will do with less employees. So instead of, you know, giving the lower class, you know, a higher minimum wage, they become more efficient, like in your hotel, retail, restaurant chains. Instead of maybe having 10 employees or 15, they'll do, you know, they'll cut down to half. So, and, you know, because that wage is half, you know, the extra minimum wage has to be passed on somehow. And so they're actually, it's sort of like they're helping them to a point, or they're cutting their hours, so they have to stay competitive with the market system. Because, you know, retail, restaurant, that is a service-based industry, which they usually don't pay that well anyway. Yeah. And my question is, you know, and so what they're doing is they're paying more, but they're employing less. I guess that would be my question.
Yeah, so will a higher minimum wage mean fewer jobs, Laura Dresser?
You know, I think that I guess the European context matters a little bit here. It's true that it may be true that in some European countries, the minimum wages are high enough that they really are impacting labor demand, although, you know, my experience of the French, I've done this, a little research, international research on hotel workers, and I know that the French minimum wage is set up with very many exceptions, including for, you know, short-term hotel workers, et cetera. So there's all sorts of ways around the French minimum wage. I think the document is about 1,000-page long that describes how their minimum wage works. It's full of holes. You know, and you can look to other countries in Europe as well that don't have the problem with unemployment that France does, that have actually higher minimum wage as a, either, you know, measured in terms of euros or compared to their median wage. Denmark, for example, the Netherlands does pretty well there too, or Denmark especially. In any case, the minimum wage in the United States is not anywhere near as close to the median wage as it is in European countries. And I think that it's a very reasonable argument that we could move this minimum wage pretty substantially without significant job loss. And in fact, the evidence from studies around the U.S. on what happens to state economies after they raise the minimum wage, or what happens on two sides of the borders to fast food restaurants when one side raises the minimum wage, one side doesn't, is that we're just so much further down in terms of that value of that minimum wage. Moving it seems to have very small or unmeasurable employment effects.
Thanks very much to Keith. We're talking with Laura Dresser, Associate Director of the Center on Wisconsin Strategy. Laura Dresser is also a labor economist, and she is the co-author of the report, The State of Working Wisconsin 2008. It's not very good, and we're talking about how to make it better. 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere if you have a question or a suggestion. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the State Capitol Report on this Labor Day, Monday, September the 1st. This is the Ideas Network. It's 13 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Labor Day, Monday, September the 1st. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us. We'll continue talking about labor issues in our next hour. David Newby, the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, is with us, as he has been for every Labor Day morning for the past, 20 years or more now. We will talk with David Newby about challenges facing American workers in today's economy and the role of labor in the presidential election as well. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about the State of Working Wisconsin, a biennial Labor Day report from the Center on Wisconsin Strategy. Laura Dresser, who is the Associate Director of COWS, is with us for the rest of this hour. And we welcome your thoughts and questions for her on the state of working Wisconsin and how to make it better in Wisconsin. Katie in La Crosse is with us. Hi, Katie. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I am a working mother, and I actually make per hour one of the best wages at my current job. but I'm still on all sorts of assistance so that I can pay for food, because with what I make, I probably wouldn't be able to pay for rent and food at the same time without it. But that's making much more than a minimum wage. So while I'm looking at it, I'm seeing, you know, almost every job is in the service industry. What are we doing to try and encourage more of the production-oriented companies? Because there's only so much a service industry can actually pay its employees.
Yeah, and Katie, you're having a tough time right now.
Well, yes. So one thing about Wisconsin is we do put lots of tax dollars into assistance. So while it's annoying to be on assistance while I'm finishing school, after school I won't be, and that's kind of how I'm looking at it. It's that I'm working full-time and I'm going to school full-time so that I can still pay for everything.
Right. So working in the service industry plus assistance, Laura Dresser, and it's still hard for Katie. What are we doing to get a bit more higher-paying jobs in production, she wants to know?
Well, you know, I think a lot of us are doing what Katie's doing, and, you know, I honor all the work you're doing, Katie, both in school and on the job, because what people do is they go get a four-year college degree, and that's how, you know, that is the one economic strategy most people take to get to a decent wage. And it's exactly right that production used to be the other route. You didn't have to always get a four-year college degree or, you know, or a two-year technical college degree. I think one of the things that we are focus on in the report is really the strength of our two-year technical college system, and our occupational associates are really, we have more folks in the labor force with us, and they earn more money than folks in other states. So that's a real strength that we have, both our four-year and two-year system. So one thing that we're doing is, you know, I think trying to build the education of the workforce and, you know, use that education to connect people to better jobs in the service sector, because the service sector isn't just the low-wage, low-benefit jobs, though there are plenty there. There are also some better ones, and with the two- and four-year degrees, you can get to them. But then also, you know, it is really important to keep an eye on the production jobs. Wisconsin is the state with the second-highest manufacturing base of any state in the nation right now, just us and Indiana. Michigan is now below us. And, you know, it is really important to focus on that base, to retaining that base, making sure that that base is competitive and stays connected, you know, stays globally competitive and can continue to be the source of jobs for folks who have, you know, either just coming out of high school or the two-year occupational associates that can connect them to good jobs in the manufacturing industry. But I think the answer in a lot of ways is also education and people pursuing that.
Yeah. You also recommend that Wisconsin continue to provide or expand health insurance coverage.
Yeah, and I think it's exciting that you got David Newby coming next, because he's been such an architect on Healthy Wisconsin and thinking about the healthcare system in this state and how to extend it to more people. And it is true that Wisconsin has a good reach. Our employers tend to provide more insurance than most, and our public sector insurance, health insurance programs reach more. And so we have less uninsured people in this state. Even so, we have a declining number of people that are get health insurance, and it's especially low-wage workers that are really in the bind when it comes to health insurance. So the Badger Care, which is our way of having health insurance for low-wage families, low-wage workers, is one important thing. That's probably something that Katie's, I hope that Katie's been able to connect to, but it just needs to expand to more people. And especially we need to figure out a way to get the health insurance wall to wall, because right now you have some employers who are providing health insurance to their workers and at a competitive disadvantage to other employers who are counting on the state or, you know, charity care to pick up their workers because they're not providing the insurance.
Next we go to Jake in Menasha. Hi, Jake.
Yes, good morning.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I have to give you a pessimistic view of all this. I've heard this year after year after year, Labor Day after Labor Day. There's an election coming up. I think, with all due respect to the guest, I think she's dreaming with regards to the changes that are going to be made, or hopefully.
Yeah, you want to give us a why here?
Because we continue to send the same people to Madison and Washington year after year, decade after decade, and nothing changes.
Yeah, so our politicians aren't going to make these changes for us, Laura Dresser?
Well, you know, I think I share some of the pessimism of the caller sometimes. I do think that the only way you get to changing the way we're having a conversation about what's going on in the economy is to think more about it and to make sure more people know at least the numbers on it. And, you know, hopefully that sparks the conversation. I don't expect everyone to really agree with the policy ideas that we have. And I don't expect that politicians would read the list and instantly do it all. But I do think that the, sort of knowing the trends and having the conversations and trying to think about how that should connect to the policymakers you're sending to the state and to D.C., is at least a start.
Yeah. What is your recommendation regarding child care? It says support working Wisconsinites with quality child care.
Yeah, that's, we have a program called Wisconsin Shares that a lot of working families rely on. It subsidizes the cost of their child care. And because child care is such an incredible expense when kids are little, and because working families don't have the kind of money that $1,000 a month in some places to take care of an infant often wipes out a wage. So this subsidy helps them. And that's an important program. It's an expensive program in the state, and we have done well to keep it, extended to everyone who can get it, but we need to keep making sure we fund that program. Additionally, it would be great if that program was rewarding quality so that the child care providers who pay a little extra money by, do a little better quality care, get a little more support from the state so that you would use that subsidy also to try and improve quality, not just to cover the need on the family side, but also to really enhance the care for the kid.
Next we go to Jim in Footville. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I have to say ditto to the last caller. Nothing much is going to change out here. Because the talking heads and the people on top, they've already got quite comfortable jobs, perks, parachutes, and so forth. So there's really no strong inclination to change much of anything. What you people have not mentioned all morning is that the real culprit out here is inflation and capitalism. Capitalism is the root of all evils. It operates just for profit and nothing else. The more money, the merrier, at the expense of somebody else. And the people on the bottom are trampled on every time.
Yeah, okay, the problem is capitalism. And again, another pessimist in our listening base here, Laura Dresser.
It's not the Labor Day holiday we were hoping for. I think it is... I think what the U.S. is doing right now and relates exactly to what the caller is saying is that we have a system where the rewards are increasingly concentrated and where the political power sits where the rewards are often, and so that you have self-reinforcing systems about the connection between the rewards and the politics and the policies that get enacted that further enhance that direction in the economy. And I think it is a real problem. Not every capitalism looks exactly like the U.S., and there's lots of different ways to run this economy, even to run it better, even under some of the presumptions of capitalism, I think. But I do agree with the caller that right now we have a sort of self-reinforcing system, and that's a it's discouraging to see that.
Well, let's try to leave it on a somewhat encouraging note, even if you have to. Laura Dresser, you did mention earlier in the half hour that you tend to be an optimist. You hope to see some of these recommendations at least worked toward to better the lives of working Wisconsinites.
Yeah, I think that this is a it's a wake up call always when you see so much bad data in one place, or a wake up call for a geek at least, but that you can. that you can see that there are real strengths in this Wisconsin economy, and that if any state can, you know, figure out how to broadly share prosperity instead of concentrate it to the top, you know, Wisconsin has a strong and proud tradition of being that state where we innovate in ways where we try and build up the middle and pull up the bottom instead of only reward the top.
Yeah. Well, happy Labor Day to you.
Happy Labor Day. Thanks.
Laura Dresser, Associate Director of the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, a labor economist, co-author of The State of Working Wisconsin, 2008. I'm sure you can find a copy of the report on the Center on Wisconsin Strategy website. We thank her for being with us. We thank Rob Ferret for producing this hour and to Michelle Kofel for on-air production. And we hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We'll have lots of special coverage on the Republican National Convention this week. Tom Ashbrook has On Point live from St. Paul all week long. He'll be there today starting at 9 o'clock. The National Public Radio Convention coverage, though, for this evening has been canceled since the convention has scaled back its schedule due to Hurricane Gustav. President Bush and Vice President Cheney have canceled their appearances before the Republican National Convention tonight. We expect that National Public Radio coverage will continue tomorrow, should the convention continue tomorrow as scheduled. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.